an Israeli military assault on a flotilla of civilian ships in international waters carrying 10,000 tons of humanitarian aid to the Palestinian population of Gaza resulted in at least 9 dead, dozens injured, and an international firestorm of protest. While the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs claimed that during the interception of the ships, the demonstrators on board attacked the IDF naval personnel with live fire and light weaponry, including knives and clubs, passengers on board tell a different story. Survivors of the attack told Free Gaza, one of the groups that organized the flotilla, that Israeli troops who boarded the Turkish flagship Mavi Marmara, the site of the worst violence and all of the fatalities, rappelled down ropes from helicopters onto the ship and began to shoot the moment their feet hit the deck. The 700 passengers from 40 nations aboard the seized ships, which included a Nobel Peace Laureate, parliamentarians, and former U.S. diplomats, were brought to the Israeli port of Ashdod, where they were questioned and had cameras, laptops, cell phones, and even clothes confiscated. In reaction to the Israeli attack, protests erupted across the world. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey, where 4 of the 9 killed were from, accused Israel of state terrorism and withdrew its ambassador to Israel. The United Nations Security Council condemned the attack and demanded an impartial investigation into the naval assault. Leaders of the Free Gaza movement vowed to send another cargo ship to Gaza in the coming days. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Ramzi Kaisia, an organizer with the Free Gaza movement, who reviews the tragic events resulting from the Israeli attack and the reason human rights groups are challenging Israel's Gaza blockade enforced since June 2007.
Well, we were last in touch with our ships just before the attack began. They reported that they had been surrounded by Israeli ships and that they thought that maybe the Israelis were going to go ahead and try and take them there in international waters rather than wait for them to approach Gaza. Our communications were cut at that time, but there was a live satellite feed from the largest passenger ship, the Turkish ship, representing the Human Rights and Humanitarian Relief Foundation in Turkey. That continued for several more minutes, and there were a number of international journalists aboard that ship who were reporting. What they stated was that Israeli commandos rappelled down from helicopters, firing at the passengers as they came onto the ship, that they had killed one, possibly two people at that time. The organizers aboard the ship immediately called all the passengers to go inside the ship, to sit down, to make sure that they, you know, did nothing that would be interpreted as threatening. They raised a white flag on the ship, and at this point, some of the passengers began to physically defend themselves against the Israeli soldiers. The Israeli soldiers continued to open fire. All of the ships were taken. We had 3 passenger ships and 3 cargo ships on this flotilla, carrying 700 passengers from 40 different countries, humanitarian aid workers, human rights workers, members of parliament, international journalists, and 10,000 tons of humanitarian and developmental aid. The ships were towed to the port of Ashdod in southern Israel. The passengers were offloaded and placed in a temporary detention camp that the Israelis have been constructing for the last couple of weeks around the port.
Ramzi, can you respond to statements by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that the Israeli commandos were attacked by those on board the ships with clubs, knives, and even live fire that caused them to shoot and kill 9 of the passengers? And also, if you would, place in context some of the videos that are being broadcast in our media that shows some of those protesters striking the Israeli commandos with poles.
This had actually been a case of aggression against any of those soldiers, as blatant as what they are saying, then I think that is something that would have immediately been transmitted and wouldn't have waited so many hours before the Israeli government started putting this forward as their theory of what happened. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. The passengers aboard these ships are well-known human rights, humanitarian aid workers. Everyone went through nonviolence training. We take a pledge of nonviolence. We insisted that port authorities at every port that the ships left from, and the different ships left from different ports in the eastern Mediterranean, but that at every port, the port authorities searched the ships, searched the cargo, to make sure that there were no weapons on board, because we knew that this is going to be the propaganda from the Israeli government. And we wanted to make sure that we had a strong counter to that. Now, the notion that Israeli soldiers, IDF soldiers from the most highly trained military in the world, the fourth most powerful military in the world, folks who had been handpicked for this mission, who had been training for weeks for this mission, that they had somehow not planned for the possibility of how are we going to take this ship with hundreds of people aboard, that they're firing stun grenades and tear gas and indeed live ammunition as they came down onto these ships was not going to terrorize people and cause them to fear for their lives. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I fear that what happened this morning was a cold calculation by the Israeli government to try and to frighten off any future attempts to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza.
Ramzi, as we conclude, please tell our listeners about the central mission of your organization to get humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza and why that's so important to challenge this blockade.
Well, for a little over 4 years now, the Israeli government has subjected the people of Gaza to an increasingly severe blockade. Today, this means that less than 20% of the supplies that are normally needed for trade in Gaza are actually allowed in. Gaza is a tiny little place. It's 25 miles long by 4 to 7 miles wide, with 1.5 million people living there, half of them children. It's one of the most densely populated places on the planet, and it does not have the physical resources to be able to provide and support the population that is living there. Two-thirds of them themselves refugees from the 1948 founding war of Israel, people who had lived in Haifa, in Yaffa, in towns in the north, what is now Israel, and who were forced out and forced to settle in Gaza. It's become the world's largest open-air prison. And the consequences of that are, as you may predict, every UN agency working in Gaza, every international aid agency working in Gaza, has thoroughly documented the devastating effects of this blockade, serious increases in childhood malnutrition, massive increases in poverty. 95% of Gaza's native industries have been forced to close because they cannot get the necessary materials to continue to operate. Electricity is only sporadic. Spare parts for the repair of machinery, maintenance of machinery, cannot come in. So you have a population that has been subjected to this increasingly a severe wake, this increasingly severe deprivation. And it was our intention to say that collective punishment is an act that is illegal under international law and that is profoundly immoral. And if the international community will not itself implement and force Israel to hold to the international standards, then I think it becomes incumbent on us as private citizens, as people of conscience, to stand up and say, no, this cannot continue, not in our name. We will take direct, nonviolent action in order to violate this unjust blockade and bring some hope to the people of Gaza.
That was Ramzi Kaizia of the Free Gaza Movement. Contact the group's U.S. office at area code 510-232-2500 or visit their website at freegaza.org.